Okay, let's begin with the bow. Great. Okay, so great to see so many people here. Afterwards, Michael reminded me that I was not clear in one part of the instruction, or maybe the whole instruction, I don't know. But what we're taking in is what we don't want. It's not just, it's symbolized by what's hot, heavy, difficult. And what we're giving out is what we really want, would like to get. You know, love, compassion, peace, whatever. So we're offering that out. And usually we're totally motivated by what can I get for me and trying to find our best situation in every, you know, our best, most comfortable comfort zone, the Goldilocks zone, wherever we are. But the point here in this practice is to reverse our usual clinging to self and what can I get for me and how can I be better off or more happy, whatever it is. But we're actually reversing that through this practice. And fundamentally, it flips the way we see things. And the other thing I didn't mention, which I have mentioned before, is there is no place for the negativity or illness or whatever you're taking in to get stuck. Because fundamentally, the practice begins with emptiness. It begins with no self. That there's no self that's going to hold on to something that we take in. And I use the image of Swiss cheese because I know that one of Pema's talks that I was reading, this is from like 1983, she talked about taking in through all the pores of the body. So that made me think of Swiss cheese. So I use that image because it's just quick. And the sense that nothing can actually, things come in, but there's no place for things to get stuck because there's nothing solid. And we breathe out what is open and spacious and what we wish to relieve the situation with. So I will not, I'll just leave it at that. And so last week, as I mentioned, Erica did introduce Tonglin for people that were new, as well as many of you have already worked with this quite extensively. So the discussion seemed really good and exciting, so I thought we would just continue this week because it seemed like there was so much more to say. So please feel free to share, and everyone will talk and answer, and it's just open floor here. Oh, before we begin, I want to mention that John went to the Profound Treasury Retreat with us last week, and he took Bodhisattva vows.
Oh.
Congratulations. Oh. Yeah, that's a great program.
Well, now we can ask him to teach us whenever we want.
Oh, I've already asked him. But watch out.
He's going to learn how to say no real quick. It's unreasonable demands. So.
I understand I don't know anything more, strictly speaking, than before I went.
That's already a good sign.
That is a good sign. But it does bring up a point in terms of people. As we go along here, we want everyone to develop as teachers. So it's not just us sitting in these seats that we know something. It's just that we've been exposed to this material a little longer and maybe practice a little longer. But we see everyone as a potential teacher, and we want to start opening up that situation a little more in the fall to have the people that are interested join in and start making contributions, you know, in terms of teaching some of the material. So we will work on that. So, onward.
John.
Take it. Well, I think I'll start with Gary. He had his hand. We'll get John in a moment.
It's really very serendipitous that this evening of, you know, the whole Tonglin, because this morning I had an interesting situation. Just to set to the scenario, I had a customer that was very stressed out, just got off a red eye from Arizona, and was coming to the airport, and I was picking up and driving him to the house. And the gentleman, I try to always set things up so it makes it easier for people when they come in so they know what's going on, so it's not like a big surprise and they can't find me. So I called the wife, I talked to her and just told her where I was, with okay, everything's fine, she didn't say anything's unusual. Husband came to me, totally like blew up at me. Like, you know, it was my fault that, you know, it was so difficult to find where I was located and all that. I'm sorry, sir, this is the best I could do because this is what the regulations for Massport, you know, mandate us. So it's interesting because I just kind of just took whatever he was putting out there and just, you know, kind of just flipped it back and just said, you know what, I understand that you're upset, sir, but, you know, I promise you we'll, you know, we'll do things so to make it easier for you and all that. And it's interesting because he was so mad for most of the ride home, and then he kind of chilled out. And then I got an email from my boss telling me that I get a nice letter from them, a response from them, because most people never respond, especially if they have a bad situation or something bad, they never respond. And it's just amazing how things just got, like you said, flipped.
Uh-huh.
That was just really incredible.
So they sent a nice letter to
you?
Wow.
Yeah. So it's just really interesting, just that whole flipping. So I guess, you know, I can do more of that flipping now.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that I've got the skills to do that. And
mm-hmm.
also that, you know, to have this structure to kind of have a framework to be able to make those things happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, very powerful stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a tool. It's a real tool.
Yeah.
Did people practice it last week after the class?
I say I actually do it pretty regularly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And one thing that sort of I mean, because I know people always say it feels like it's getting stuck. And so I've worked on different ways to think about it. And so sometimes what I think of is that I'm just like a little cell on the surface of the great heart of compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And so things just come through and go out. Like it's so not about me.
Right.
I just happen to be there as it comes in and the other stuff goes out. And it's really not, you know, the same way things pass through your lungs, like the lung cells are not taking it personally, that's
mm-hmm.
just where they are. To kind of do that, but then it does, you know, the awareness of it helps, you know, particularly when I'll do it for students I have who are in really tough spots, that, you know, it sort of sets me up. I mean, Gary didn't know this was coming. You don't know when someone's about to get off the plane and blow up at you, but some of the kids I kind of know something might be coming, and just to be ready, like this is going to come in and it's really not about me, but I could let something, like you did, Gary, let something come out that's not, I'm not sending back what they sent me, because it's not going to help.
I think that the key statement you just made is not about me. I'm in another group class, and last Sunday we were talking about this. The son of Trungpa Rinpoche's Sakyong Nipong wrote at one point, he made a suggestion for people to look in the mirror, look at their reflection in the mirror, and say, this is not about me, 3 times. Just to sort of begin to help you understand in terms of the Mahayana, we are in a reality far greater than our own little making, even though obviously all the things we make are precisely what our time is down. But really opening ourselves up to a vaster sense of space, which is completely beyond my personal private concern. It helps us work with understanding the pain of the world and the confusion and absolute craziness that is rampant on this planet. And we realize how much of a struggle we're in terms of a collective issue to work with the kind of stuff on a day-to-day basis. We are so insulated ourselves. We're very fortunate to think about what's going on elsewhere. So I think just it's training and learning how to basically go beyond the reference point of me all the time.
And I wanted to just mention, as you know, I think most people are familiar with this book, but if you're not, it's Training the Mind. This is Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche on the Lojong slogans, and point seven is in the beginning part. And there are many other books and that reference and work with this material. And this is a little book that Michael Fagan mentioned last week, I think.
It's out of stock. I will have copies at the end of the month,
okay,
in case you're interested.
It's called, for the tape. Let me say it for the tape. It's called Tom Lin, The Path of Transformation by Pema Chodron. And this is by Vajra Dattu Publications. That's why it's harder for us to get.
You can't normally order it. You'd have to order from Canada and pay a lot of money for postage.
But you have ordered some?
I've ordered copies. Yeah, I've ordered about 15 copies for
general
some situation, so we'll have copies available.
Okay, so you can let Michael know. And
at the same time, if you're interested in the Training of the Mind, which is now in a different format.
Yes, it's a bigger
book. Jeremy.
Well,
I mean,
Jeremy.
Whatever
you're saying. Oh, Jeremy, no one's ever called me Jeremy.
Well, we always have to have a little bit of shock.
Yeah, that's good. A shock is good. I can take it.
Yeah.
Emily, my name is Emily.
That's right.
That's okay. Yeah.
Anyway, we will have that. I can get that anytime. If you're interested, just let me know. We can get those copies.
But I know when you studied it before, was that in another Pema Chodron book?
Yes.
Part of it?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the name?
Start Where You Are.
Yeah.
Right. So the very first book we used, it's Module 1, Start Where You Are. Yeah, there was a reference.
But the stuff in that book is different. It's not just like sections from the other book. It's a little different because Emily gave me a copy of that little book.
Right, this one's
the Pema Chodron book.
Yeah.
So the stuff in Start Where You Are is different.
I thought it was the first one.
Oh, is that what we used?
That was the first one, but then we did do Start Where You Are. Was the top one?
Oh, that's right.
It might have been Module 4 or so, but we put.
That's true.
All the slogans online on a sheet. I think it was Unit 4, but you can look.
And we used, what book did we, I don't remember, but you can look online. But we did a whole class on it.
Yeah, we didn't cover it.
No. The wording of in this is different than Penny's. But not that much.
This is a real treasure, actually. And she extends it to some other aspects, like Maitri practice and the four immeasurables and things. So it's worth having. It's good.
I wanted to say something. I've really been amazed that I have more and more situations where I'm in situations with people who in the past would have set me off. And I just have to use the language that seems to use the gap or the space where I just see them. And usually what I see is pain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Probably the best word is pain, like on their face. And other times I just go straight to, you know, getting this pain or usually feel rejected or just sort of attacked or something. And it's just completely, and then the reaction is compassion because they just look pain. And I don't know offhand what I do, but it's not like some fake, like, oh, I'm so sorry for you. It's just like, just him seeing that. Yeah. It's really stunning.
Mm.
To be totally honest, I don't meditate that much in between the class. So I don't do it as regularly as I should.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, 3 times a week, but.
Well, even if you do some, you said 3 times a week. I mean, that's
very
something.
Potent.
It is potent.
This class is potent.
It's good.
Anyway.
Oh, good. I see. Good.
Anyway, so I wanted to share that.
Thank you. I just want to see. Chris, did you have something to say earlier? Oh, okay.
No.
All right.
I was just stretching.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Jump in when you want to. Megan?
I use this in my hospice work a lot. And, I had a particularly challenging time this week, and I was getting a little bit frustrated with trying to do Tonglen because I was distracted by it. And
by the Tonglen?
By the suffering.
The suffering.
And something just occurred to me as I was persevering in my Tonglen practice was that just a thought came to my head that this is something that many, many, many Buddhists have been doing for a very long time. And many, many Buddhists will do it for a long time. And many are doing it right now. And I just suddenly felt like I wasn't the only one here. I was like a part of this huge group of people who've been doing this for a very long time. And then on top of that, I could hear a chaplain praying. And I realized that the chaplain was doing their form of Tonglen. And then I thought of all the people who have ever prayed when they witnessed some kind of suffering and they prayed for an end to the suffering. And I just suddenly, like, it was about me. It just kind of opened up. And it just came, and I was able to be present with that and breathe through it. Interestingly enough, the breathing wasn't even there for me. I just felt like it was cycling right through me.
To build off of what Megan is saying, I've actually been more conscious of the suffering, not only as humans, but as animals and as insects. I mean, there's even to that level, they're little creatures trying to get food, and it's funny, you made that gesture the other day. I knew there was a little insect on me, and I tried to take them off and go outside, and I was in a rush, and as I tried to pick it up, I killed it. And I said, my regret, my speediness, right? If I didn't have the gentleness to take a split second, and I made a note to myself, and I said, you know what, next time, if I feel it, I'll let it, bring me into the just present moment. And that's a living, as little as it is, it's a little living being. So it's just the suffering goes, and what brought this about was I was outside my porch, and I was watching an ant, and a robin came down and pecked it and ate it. And I said, wow. I'm like, this just happened, you know. It's a peaceful day in the neighborhood, and this exactly. It's like, I'm worried about what I'm going to eat, you know. I've been more aware of suffering as well, so.
Yeah. So when you weren't here at the time, a few weeks ago, for some reason, several of us all had insect stories at that where insects go, and I had a bee and someone that I think that might have been.
Oh yeah, she talked about
it. It was really fine. Yeah. I mean, I do that all the time because I work at a nature center and I'm kind of very aware, and it's really cool. You'll see it. We just see life going on. It's never a peaceful neighborhood in nature. The kids have seen a dragonfly and say, oh, look at the beautiful dragonfly, look at the beautiful butterfly, and the dragonfly eats the butterfly. And there that is.
Wow.
Like, oh, it's so much more than that. Just get out of the house a little. But it was funny that one time there were three stories about insects.
Well, I thought it was interesting because it really shows the progression of Mahayana towards an open heart of compassion, that we even notice these things and that we feel anything about them. And this gentleness is that that this gentleness and openness comes from actually our meditation practice and this gradual opening of the heart. And I think that becomes a very kind of instantaneous way we see it, because it's all around us, these little bugs, and they scurry around when you move. And the bigger situations sometimes are more dramatic, but it doesn't matter, big or small.
So I want to ask about the opening, that sort of experience of opening, and the technique, because sometimes it can be quite moving. It's like you get access to feeling that opens up and broadens. And so seems like, ah, oh, that's, I feel like, I get a sense that that's what it means to expand compassion, generosity to others. And other times, not at all. And I assume, you know, on some level, it doesn't speed away as far. But it's, I guess it's, what's the question? The question, well, I've already answered the question that it's okay either way, unless that remains a question. But it feels disappointing. It feels, I don't know.
Like you didn't do it right.
Like I didn't, yeah.
But it's actually
like
it actually unfolds by itself.
Yeah.
The process, you do your practice, you do shamatha, and you keep working with, you know, it seems sort of ordinary, but it actually opens naturally. So the Hinayana opens naturally towards Mahayana. The shamatha opens naturally to vipassana, to raising the gaze, to expanding, to being in, you know, expanding into the world. And we aren't always in that spot. Sometimes we're more shut down, but you can notice that other side. When you don't feel that, look inward and say, well, what's going on here? You know, maybe you can see more self-cherishing or holding for yourself, or you feel injured or something, and there's a sense of pulling back. So just notice. I'd say just notice with complete equanimity. There's no prescription here. And it's not like you cross a threshold and then you're this way. You know, it's not like that. It's just, we just move along.
I think Pema says, like, when you hit spots like that, you can actually do Tonglen for people like yourself who don't really feel much.
Okay. Yeah. Erica and I were talking about Tonglen on Monday. She caught me up on the class a little bit, and I said, you know, when I used to live at Karma Choling, there was this guy, he said, oh, I just love Tonglen. I could do it all the time. And I'm thinking, oh, I hate this practice. You've got to be kidding. And Erica said, well, I'm a little skeptical of those people that really love it. But I don't know. Maybe that's not true all around. So I think it's very open, you know, in terms of we are different at different times, you know. And you can't, it's not a prescription. You know, I'm going to be this way or else. You know, that sounds pretty good.
There are situations that you should be feeling the compassion and you're wondering why it's not.
Situations in which I should be doing something else is the story of my life. Sure. Yeah. So it's not entirely
Well, I'm just thinking. It's
that's
just
very good. That's helpful. Yeah. What you just offered right there. That's great.
Seems like you said it just sort of. You don't know when it's going to happen. It's almost like keeping your eyes open and you don't know one of those insects is going to fly by. I mean, I was surprised at a few incidents that had recently when I felt compassion towards someone. I didn't expect it.
Yes.
I didn't even want it because I didn't think they deserved it. I just happened to be in the situation that had happened maybe many times before, and for whatever reason at that point, I was open. There were probably many other situations where I wouldn't.
I feel the same way, and I think Pema had wrote a great metaphor. She had described kind of learning coming on in layers, and gave the metaphor of hard mud, and it rains and it rains, and it eventually gets soft. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding that pretty often. So
thanks. Who said that?
Pema.
Can you repeat the metaphor about the rain comes and then what?
It's
hard mud.
We're like hard mud.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it rains and it just softens. And eventually, you know, it's soft.
You walk around in your bare feet in mud and you get a little bit of that knowledge and then try that.
It rubs off.
It Does anyone have any questions about the technique, any step of the practice that's confusing or difficult, or maybe the whole thing? Yeah,
this is a question, but what I was working on was with someone who was sick, mm-hmm. so I was breathing in the sadness and the suffering of that, but then, you know, my first reaction was to breathe out healing. Mm-hmm. But it is. But and then I sort of worked with that a little bit, and I moved to, you know, strength and comfort and to help that person. Mm-hmm. So I felt like the healing wasn't really the area that I should be working on. That's the way to look at it, because I'm not looking to get someone better.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
It's really just to make their life, you know, more quality in the moment.
Because healing sounds like you're trying to have some kind of outcome.
Right.
Like you've already said, this is what should happen, and I want to help make it happen. So that's not exactly what we're doing, because we're accepting whatever is happening. It's a total acceptance of what's happening, and we're offering that person, it's more mental support and compassion and their own ability to work with their situation the best they can, like sending out feelings that would help them to accept or to work with the situation and overcome their fear.
Yeah. Really, the only output that happens is that you can open them.
Right.
That you can't necessarily help them, but
right.
you can open them.
Yeah.
You can open more to them and soften to them. That's what I find, is that mm-hmm. this is, I enjoy, I get a lot out of Tonglen, mm-hmm. because I feel that more than any of the other practices, it opens me up and softens me more than anything else.
But that does affect other people.
Say that again.
That does affect other people.
Yeah,
when you're open. That's what diffuses the situation. We had a thing at the day center today where this woman came in late and she talks in a voice that she has a megaphone in her throat to begin with, and she's just screaming at us for, you know, being abusive. I said something, she emptied a path on the floor and she had 10 minutes to clean it up, and she wasn't going to tell me, okay, you know, you want to work on this because we're going to close. And she was abusing me, and then she was abusing this other woman who had been volunteering for 9 years, so she was just like screaming and yelling, and then yelling at other people for being loud, and finally, you know, like my boss is usually pretty, you know, okay, you know, she's not feeding into that, and she finally got so sick of it, she just came out and said, okay, this is enough, you're not abusing my staff, you know, this is not okay, you know, Annie's been volunteering here for 9 years, she's the kindest hearted person in the world, but she is. And, you know, you need to leave for a week.
Right.
And I was like, you know, at the time, I wasn't doing Tonglen. I was going, go, Marilyn, you know, get rid of her. You know, because we were like, just, you know, she had been in there for 10 minutes screaming. And it's just like the voice, you know, you could kill her. It's just like, oh, my God. You know, and then tonight I was, you know, trying to do Tonglen for her here.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Because I, you know, was thinking, you know, maybe I could have another reaction to it. Mm-hmm. But
that's really a good way to use Tonglen. So after the fact, you can process something that way and work with the emotions of that situation. That can be really helpful. Even though it doesn't occur to you in the situation because it's so quick or so difficult or whatever. But I have to say also that your boss, then, that's applying skillful means, prajna, like to cut through a situation that you can't just embrace it with kindness. That would not work. So that is the kindest action, is to be very clear and cutting.
Yeah, she needed to cause, you know, set a limit. To
right,
her.
She did.
She was
right.
being very abusive.
Right. Right. Yeah, so kindness can take many shapes.
Mm-hmm. And tough love.
Tough love.
Why did she take so long to do that?
Well, she was in the other room, But she could, I mean, there was no way you were missing this voice. The neighborhood could probably hear it. And the boyfriend of this woman was in a separate little room with our case manager. He was saying, geez, the only voice I can hear is hers. And why is that, you know? And she's often like that. And, you know, the case manager said, well, gee, you know, when you're with her, you're kind of like that, too. And you want to know, well, why is that? You know, and this woman uses heroin and cocaine.
Oh, wow.
And Nina was like, well, you know, I mean, I would have said, you know, she's his girlfriend. I would have said, you know, what do you think this is?
Yeah.
You know, I would have said, you know, this could be drugs.
Yeah, right.
But I would love to see how this all could be used with the homeless people. I mean, I've always thought that. Like how, you know, if I don't see myself as ever being a good enough teacher to you, you know, but how they could use it. I would love to see some way to bring the Buddhism in there, because they're so assaulted by difficulty all the time.
But this Becky does some practices with them, but not a lot.
She does a meditation. I don't know what the meditation is like.
She actually asked me about maybe going with it. I think that might be. She doesn't feel like that's what she's saying. So I don't people know. Becky Shevney Hall runs the Chaplains on the Way, which is a ministry to the homeless and poor and all that.
If I could offer, you are there every day. You witness all of this, and you're still there.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I get feeling
that's Tong Lin,
very hopeless are. Sometimes, and like this, I'm doing nothing. I can't help.
But you're showing up.
Anybody. And then, you know, during the winter when we were, like, working so long and so hard and at night and everything, you know, Julie said, you're being here.
Yes.
That's the most important thing you can
yes.
do.
You're doing what very few people can do.
Here. Well, yes, you can. I can't be nice to the insects. I mean, they're all guilting me.
Well, we'll take care of the insects.
The insects are easy to take care of.
I would add one more thing, Roberta, too. I would add one more thing. It's your compassion, I notice, is with a lot of people who I think many people would shun because of the dependency on drugs or the decisions. And I think that is just so wonderful because you're loving the people that many find unlovable, yet we're all the same. It's just they have a different degree of whatever it is that's bothering them. So I find that pretty cool.
Most of them are pretty lovable, actually. And the extent to which they love each other is remarkable. I mean, I feel like some of these people, it's got one guy I talked to today, I feel like he would stop drinking if he didn't have this wonderful community. Maybe, but he has this great, you know, unity community. I mean, they hug each other, they you know, help each other survive and grow into each other. They're wonderful.
Well, I think one thing you have to watch for is that you take care of yourself and that you nurture yourself through your own meditation practice and that you take some time off, that you don't, you're not there all the time, so that there is space for you to replenish. That's really important. And that's being kind to yourself and that's being kind to others, because then you can be more available over the longer haul. But you really do need to watch the balance there.
It's hard.
Yes, well, that's for you to learn, I think, and maybe that's this situation really, you know, you're on the edge here of a lot of difficulties, but the more that you can be kind to yourself and take care of yourself and give yourself space, maybe there's, you need a little more time maybe to do that, that you'll be able to, you know, I think you can continue, but you have to replenish yourself. That's important. So any other comments in terms of the practice or?
Would like to say that for me, it's almost like a lesson learned again, you know, immediately I go to self, you know, so, oh, that word, breathing claustrophobia. Oh, here I go, I'm getting claustrophobic. Oh, I hate when I get claustrophobic, you know. Oh, I'm feeling those same feelings. You know, so I'm sitting here, like, taking it all in, like, how I, you know, it's all about me, 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 me. It's, I'm feeling, oh my God, I'm getting hot. I feel, you know, my back is hurting. You know, all this anxiety is coming up. And then it's like, oh, something clicked. Oh, yeah, back to, you know, back to breathe. So I kept, every once in a while, I would go back to that, you know, the self-centeredness, the ego, and going back to me. So part of that meditation is like, oh, so I can, oh, see how I can transmute. For example, today when I came home from work, I saved one of my rose bushes, and that one of those horrible things was, you know, the, what do you call them? You know, those things that, the weeds that wind themselves around.
Oh, bittersweet.
Yeah, the bittersweet. I immediately threw everything down and went and I rescued my plant, and, you know, I got cut, and it's like, oh, wasn't that good of me? Like, oh, here I go again. So it's just really, really, this is good. This is a good practice to get, you know, myself out of the way.
Yeah.
And I often so much find myself just getting in the way, my ego getting in the way of really, you know, transmuting and letting it come in and letting it go out, as others were saying earlier.
That's actually part of the grist for the mill, though. You're very bothersome, pain in the ass kind of continuous self-obsession and self-reference is actually the thing that can actually provoke you to realize that being present really truly is beyond all of this kind of stuff. So we meet, interestingly, it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't like we reach this point where we never experience any kind of issue with ego stuff. Or, I'm sorry. On the other hand, we use it. We can use it. So it's to provoke our actual commitment to be truly present and aware, and simply trust your awareness when you see that, rather than beating yourself up saying, oh, there I go, I'm so stupid, and you go into this whole trip.
Yeah.
And then all you're doing is creating, you're going around in circles around this instead of just letting it actually perform a very good act, which is to cause you to wake up.
Yeah.
You're like strangling yourself, like the bear. With your, so apply my tree. That's a very good example. And also remember, there's no, the fundamental base of what we're doing is egolessness or emptiness. So there's no giver, there's no gift, and there's no receiver. So everything is really infused with emptiness. So therefore, then you don't get puffed up that I, you know, gave this homeless person a dollar, or you don't get puffed up that I, you know, whatever, rescued a starving cat or something. That we actually can just do things, but we don't have to bring it back to self. Right. You know, I'm a this or I'm a that. And especially the negative aspect.
That's sort of where I got to.
Yes.
Yeah. That you said it perfectly. Yeah.
So you were saving the rose, not yourself. Right? I mean, we're doing it for yourself. We're doing it to be good to the plant.
Yeah. But in the meantime, I'm puffing
myself up
in the meditation. So I was just recognizing it. I was just being aware of my thoughts about that.
Right.
And my reaction to it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So again, you know, remember that the ground of this whole path of what we've been studying, the introduction of Mahayana, Maitri is really a key point. And I never really got it until we studied this material. I just thought, oh, well, yeah, friendliness, that sounds great. But really, it matters. And it changes. It really is an inner change when you go, oh my God, I'm always criticizing myself for that same thing over and over and over again. What if I just flipped that and just said, accepted it, saw it, accepted it, and then it's sort of like surrounding yourself with loving kindness. That kind of, it doesn't mean you don't see things that you do or that you don't want to change them, but the first step in change is acceptance and seeing and acceptance, and then I think the transformation happens from that point. Because it's from love. And
openness rather than, oh, there I go again. I'm so stupid. I can't believe I did that one more time. So we transform ourself first. That's really the key. And Tong Lin feels like we're working with the world. But ultimately, as Megan said, you know, it's really what you're doing with your own mind. And the situation may or may not reflect some change from what you've done. In Gary's example, there was something that happened later, but, you know, in the moment, it wasn't really that obvious. But things actually, we can transform the world. I mean, there is the potential for us to actually make a difference. Maybe it's small, but we can make a difference for people and situations. Yes?
I feel for myself there's more of a chance for a shift to happen within the dynamic if I don't react right away, if I'm just still, if I'm sitting with whatever it is, as opposed to leaping in, you know, to get angry or take action or whatever it is. If I'm just sitting with it, something unfolds a lot of times that I didn't necessarily expect. And then I'm surprised. Yeah. Okay, I didn't really have to, you know, get all worked up about this or push through it.
Yeah.
The easier I became, the energy vibrated in that way too.
Yeah, it's really true.
Options.
Yeah, you see more options. And that's you describing the gap, right, you know, in the situation. And we never know, you know, the way people respond to us. It's always like, you always think it's about me. But in fact, I had this experience with the Profound Treasury last year where I ended up doing a whole lot of work in the Shrine Room and organizing things. And the director, who the person who was head of practice, was not very functional. And she had a walker. But I didn't know this woman before. And I just felt later on I had a lot of difficulty with her about, you know, sort of the follow-up. And then I saw her this year. She was like a totally different person. So it turns out she was on so many painkillers that she was just like out of it, totally out of it. And she was in tremendous pain. And she had had back surgery and whatever else, so two surgeries to correct a lot of problems. And there she was. It was like I had never known her other than that really difficult person. And here she was, this like really nice. I'm like, oh, hello. Like, okay. So you never know. You never know what you're faced with. And the more we can be open and spacious and not judge, which is what we have to do with ourselves first, and that's our basic training when we sit on the cushion and work with shamanism practice. That's really it. And that's why that whole practice of when a thought arises, you don't latch on to the thought and go down the road, nor do you go bad thought, good thought. We aren't labeling these thoughts that way. We're just, they're all equal, and we just let it go. That's really the beginning step in moving towards this basic equanimity. That's how we do it. I mean, it seems so, you know, infinitesimal, these little openings.
So we talked about that last week.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, about the four limitless ones.
Oh.
How, you know, they're joy, peace, love, and equanimity. And that's actually, these are actually aspects of even what we call the great emptiness. When we're actually opening up to this absolute kind of dimension, the first flash before we actually go into just the very first stage of the Tong Lin, we're actually opening up to that very thing. So training in the equanimity is helping us actually starting to familiarize, even though we don't know that that's an aspect of what is this great space. And the joy and the peace, it's all there. So as we learn how to sort of discover that this is the natural state, and this is actually what's in the space between the thoughts, that we actually begin to, it becomes less exotic and unattainable or something. It's not, you know, it's more just about what the real natural state is. And then you realize, how are we able, all of us, to ignore, do such a great job of ignoring what's actually right in front of us like this in our faces? So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I think contemplating those four aspects, and actually we encountered those four.
The four immeasurables.
The four immeasurables may all.
The more limitless ones.
May all sentient beings enjoy happiness and the causes of happiness. May they be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May they not be separated from the great happiness, devoid of suffering. May they dwell in great equanimity, free from passion, aggression, and prejudice. We should print those out, have those available. It's a very good tool for contemplation and recitation in terms of the general Mahayana orientation which we're going towards.
Yeah, I think they might be online. We put that online.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
under the
they're available, and you could just incorporate that as part of your daily practice.
So, any further questions before we end or comments? So, let's dedicate the merit.